So since we're having Youth Day, I felt it would be appropriate to talk to you about wisdom for the young. And it's something that pertains to all of us, but I thought it would be especially helpful, hopefully, to the young people in the church. The Bible has quite a bit of information for young people, and it is something that provides food for both young and old. And I've entitled my sermon, Wisdom for the Young. Wisdom for the Young. As you look at the culture today, the culture, is it focused on old people or is it focused on youth? Now, being 64, I hope it's focused on me, but I know that's not the case. The world is focused upon youth. I mean, people my age, what are they trying to do? They're trying to remain youthful. They're trying to do facelifts and all of the different things, you know, get rid of the turkey neck and all of those kinds of things in order that they can remain looking youthful. Youth is important. And youth is a good thing. But our culture tends to maybe overdo it as far as the youth are concerned. In fact, our society tends to cater to pander, to overprotect and essentially worship young people and being young. That's the important thing. And we as older people are seen as sometimes a nuisance. We drive too slowly. We're still writing checks or whatever it may be. We're not fitting in with the modern age in many cases. The main objection that we have to a youth culture is this, that it teaches wrong principles to our young people. The youth culture promotes certain principles, and unfortunately, as our young people adopt those principles, they're not helped by them. The main idea that they put across is that each young person is the center of the universe. It's me first. I come first. I am the most important thing in this world. The youth culture also preaches that youth is a time of carefree fun. And it is. It is a time for that, as we'll see, but with the right balance. And people can have fun because their parents are supporting them. They can go to school, and the school offers support. And the community offers support. They're basically holding them up and getting them through, and so they can just go about having fun. Young people are encouraged to live it up while they're young because adulthood is serious. It's full of work and trouble, and it's boring. I know my parents were not trying to get me to be non-productive, but they said, you know what, don't worry about working because at this stage in your life, because you're going to work for a long time once you start working. So go to school, get your education, and then you'll be able to go to work and be a part of that. Now, I did work some, but I didn't work maybe as hard as I could. And my parents wanted me to be successful, but they also didn't push me to get a job. Some people, because of their financial circumstance, their parents may be saying, you know, if you want to go to school, you need to get a job. I know for me, living in California, it was $80 a quarter. So, I mean, that was really pretty cheap. So anyway, but the education was actually quite good, but reasonably priced. So young people many times hear, sow your wild oats while you're young. Sow your wild oats while you're young. Extend your youth as long as possible, for you're never going to pass this way again. It's once you're not young anymore, it's over. And those are not right principles. These points may be considered conventional wisdom, but from a biblical perspective, they're nonsense. They contain just enough truth to make people believe it and follow up on it. So youth should not be a time of wild abandon. If you haven't figured that out, people living my age have realized that's not the way to go. In fact, as you think about being a young person, it's a very critical time in life that sets the stage for everything else that is going to come. And sometimes young people can follow their path, whatever they want to follow, and unfortunately make some mistakes, and they start their lives as an adult behind the eight ball. And we know a number of people that because of things that they have done, decisions that they have made, they've ended up behind the eight ball. That doesn't mean they can't be successful, but it means they've got maybe to dig themselves out of a hole and get back onto level ground and begin moving forward. But they're in a hole as they're beginning their lives. And so wisdom says there's a better path. I don't have to begin in the hole. I can begin on level ground and be successful in my life. And that's the goal that we want for all people that are in the church. So I think that's the thing that all parents want for their children. That's what we wanted for our kids when they were growing up. Now, we're going to focus on an individual here who wrote a portion of the Bible. His name was Solomon. He was the son of King David. He was the third king of Israel. And he was an individual who was given quite a bit of wisdom. And he was an inquisitive sort. He looked at people and he wanted to know what made them tick. How do people think? Why do they do what they do? And so he wanted to see the reasons behind people's actions. And from his conclusions, he recorded for young people pearls of wisdom that are still valuable today. Let's begin in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, let's begin in verse 9. And remember, I said, you know, the idea that's taught by our current culture is enjoy your youth while you can, sow your wild oats. And you might keep that in mind as we read the first portion of verse 9. It says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes." So if you stopped right there, you would think, well, Solomon is telling them to sow their wild oats, whatever you want to do, go ahead and do it. And he is telling you, to, as a young person, rejoice in your youth. You know, if you're young, there are certain wonderful things about being young. Most of you, when you get to the end of the day and you're sitting on the couch, you don't fall asleep as soon as you sit down. You're still wide awake, whereas I am falling asleep. Or, you know, I'm ready to go to bed, start getting ready to go to bed about 9 o'clock. You're still raring to go. I mean, every year at camp, all the campers, they're full of energy and they could go all night. But I, by the time that it's time to go to bed, I'm ready to go to bed. And morning comes all too quickly. But that's how it is. And Solomon tells all young people to rejoice in your youth, and you should. He says, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. So, you know, you're going to want to do things and explore different things. And there is exploration and experiences that you can go through that are positive experiences and positive explorations that you can enjoy with no consequences. It says, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. So you'll see things. You'll want to do things, experience things. And it says, good for you. You're young. Enjoy those things. And I have a number of very positive memories about things that I've experienced. And everybody that's a little bit older, all of us have those same experiences and memories that are in our minds, and we look upon them fondly. But then it gives us some parameters. Okay, so rejoice in your youth, but what does it tell you? It says here at the end of verse 9, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. So you don't have a blank check. And you can do whatever you want. Yes, you can do that. That's your choice. But you have to realize that there is a being to whom you are answerable. So you have to think about that as you go about whatever activities you're going to be involved with. So you have to think about, okay, I'm going to be answerable to God. Now, you don't see God, and you're not going to hear God's voice saying, don't do it. Nothing like that. God's not going to grab you by the shoulder and restrain you. But God is there, and you're going to have to ultimately answer to God for what you do or what you don't do. Everybody will. Everybody will stand before the judgment seat of God, and we'll have to explain why we did this and what our motivations were. And we're going to have to come before God and do that. Everybody. So he says, realize there is a God there. So as you're going about whatever activities you're doing, you have to think about there is a God being that I have to answer to. And he's watching what I'm doing, and he may not intervene in my life to stop me. So we can do what we want, and we want to be wise in the choices that we make. And we find here, as it talks about God, it goes on to set some parameters. It sets some parameters and gives us some warnings against just pursuing self-gratification and doing whatever you want. Let's look at the first warning. It's found here in verse 10. It says, therefore, God's going to bring you into judgment, and we have to realize that. God is watching us. That's the first warning. The second warning is this: therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart. And it goes on to say, for childhood and youth are, and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So it tells us that you know, being young, that it's vain, basically. It's vain. It's not the end of life. And we can pursue the things that we want as young people, but you know, that period of time is going to pass away quickly. It's going to pass away quickly. It's like the snapping of your fingers. Solomon is telling us that the years fly by, and don't let them fly by. They can just go away so quickly, and you have nothing to show for them. So if your whole life is focused on having fun, when you get to the end of it and you look back, you can say, you know what, I had fun. But what do you have to show for it? You know, I know that as a young person, I had a number of experiences. Some of the experiences were quite positive. And as I said, I look back on them fondly. But there are other experiences that I went through that nothing positive came out of those experiences, other than learning, I don't want to do that again. And that is a lesson. But you don't want to waste your youth. And some people waste their youth just pursuing fun and having a good time. And their whole lives are bound up in experiences. And we do learn from experience, but you want your young years to be, have experiences, but you want to learn some things because they set the stage for what's going to come next. When you're an adult, your teen years, they set the stage for what's coming up. So we want to use our youth in the right way, and then those years become meaningful and productive. We want to use the years that you've been given in the best way. Solomon tells us that, he says, remove sorrow from your heart. So what does he mean by that? Remove sorrow from your heart. Does he mean you always want to be having fun and having a good time partying because you don't want to be sorrowful? Is that what he means? That's not what he means. He means, you know, there are things that you can do that will cause you great sorrow. They will cause you great pain. And the point that he's making is don't go there. Don't involve yourself in things that bring you great sorrow. I know there was just an example. When I was in high school, there were, you know, people used to come out of the parking lot when they left, and there was a straightaway, and they would just hit the gas and really power down the highway up to a stop sign down the road a ways. But everybody would come out of there pretty fast. And they would always tell them, don't be speeding out of there. And they would have the police out there periodically trying to slow them down. One day a kid came out of there, and he had a nice car. And he came out and he powered down the street. And off to the right was a box. There was a box, and all he could see was the box. So he thought, I'll just clip the box. So he did. He didn't realize what was in the box. There was a kid in the box. And you know, that young man had to carry, you know, here he is, 16, 17, 18 years old. He meant no harm by what he did. But he is my age, and he's had to carry that burden his whole life. And sometimes you can do things, it may not be something that drastic, but things can happen in your life, and that's a sorrow that you will always carry with you. It doesn't go away. It'll always be on your mind. And it's something that stays with you. So you know what he tells you? He says, don't go there. Don't do things that are going to cause you sorrow, because sometimes that sorrow is something that you can't get rid of. It says also in the scriptures here, it says, and put away evil from your flesh. It's a thought that goes along with remove sorrow from your heart. As you remove sorrow from your heart, what you're doing is you're putting away evil from your flesh. And that it defines what it means to remove sorrow from your heart. So Solomon approaches the problem on the level of the heart. He says, remove sorrow from your heart. Put away evil from your flesh. So, you know, we can have different thoughts about different things that we would like to do or may seem like they were fun. And once you step back and think about them, wait a minute, there could be some terrible consequences to this. And I was thinking about my, you know, conduct in my teen years. And trust me, there are some things that I regret. And I'm very thankful that I didn't get caught. All right? Not that they were criminal activities, but people wouldn't have been pleased, most emphatically my parents. So put away evil from your flesh. Begin to, you know, we need to step back and say, hey, what am I doing here? Is this wise? And you have to stop and do that as a young person, because as young people, your brain is not fully developed yet. You're still young and it is still developing. And the frontal lobes are what guide you in your decision making and making good choices. And as a young person, sometimes you tend to be more impetuous and don't think it through the way that you should. And it's like that young man hitting the box. You know, as you're probably older, you're thinking, I'm not going to hit the box. I don't know what's in the box. And maybe I need to be careful here. Hopefully we do that as adults. But we want to put away evil from our flesh and remove sorrow from our heart. And it paves the way for life ahead of us. And we don't have to carry that burden. It also tells us something important, a third warning, a third important point made here in chapter 12, verse 1. It says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come. So he counsels young people to remember God as they're filled with youthful energy, they're filled with ambition, their minds are quite effective, they're fast learners, that in your youth, take the opportunity to get to know God and to begin to seek what is right. You know, when you're older, it's harder to do that. It's older, as it's harder to do that, and chapter 12 goes through a number of different things about that. So we want to be individuals who are in our youth beginning to pursue God. Just pursue Him in your youth. Don't wait until you're older. So Solomon urges young people to seek God before experiencing the world, before accumulating the baggage and penalties of sin and flawed character. You can pursue a path that brings great damage, as I've said, and once you're on that path, it's a lot harder to come back to that path by which you're seeking God. So he's telling us, don't even go there because of the damage that can be done to all of us. So, you know, I think if you talk to every single older individual in this room, probably every one of them can remember back to their misspent youth. I do. And some things I think back on them and it kind of scares me. You know, you think about, well, I did that. And it is kind of like, what was I thinking? But I was young and it was cool or seemed cool at the time. And that's the way young people are. Young people tend to, you know, most of us are not going to bungee jump off of a tall bridge or a tall building, are we? You're not going to take that parachute and jump off one of the tall buildings in Houston. I'm not. Some of you might. Most of us aren't going to do that at this age. But most young people, where's the bungee cord? When can we do it? And they're happy to do that kind of thing because that's their age. I know that I used to jump off the high dive. I never dove off the high dive, but I would jump off the high dive. Now, I'm not jumping off the high dive anymore. I get up there and I start feeling uneasy and, you know, I think, what happened? I could do this at one time. I could probably do it if somebody had a gun pointing at me. But at this point, I'm not doing it volitionally. You know, I don't need to get up there. I don't want to get up there. It's just like my slip and slide experience. I'm done with that. You know, I don't need to prove that I'm going to mess myself up doing the slip and slide. So anyway, the thing is, God wants you as a young person to begin to seek Him early. He gives you parameters on what to seek. He gives you warnings because He wants you to pursue the best course. So as we think about fun, you live in a world where people have defined fun differently than we would as members of the church. You know, fun is something that is a fairly recent thing that people do. Up until the 18th century, fun was not something that people generally did. Life was hard, life was short, life was difficult, and fun was a rare thing for most people. But since so we live in a more prosperous time, we have longer lives, and we have a lot more free time, then fun has become the focal point. Fun and all of the experiences that come with that. And it's something that people spend a lot of time on, and there's nothing wrong with it. And fun is defined by people in different ways. You know, some people find it fun to play checkers or chess. Some people find it fun to read. Some people find it fun to play sports or watch sports or play video games. There's a wide variety of things that people define as fun. Some people find it fun to talk. Some people find it fun to visit with family and friends. People have a lot of different ideas about fun. And there are a lot of choices that you can make. You've got to think about what is fun. And sometimes, you know, you want fun, but you want it, it's got to have an edge to it. It's got to be kind of edgy or a little bit dangerous. And sometimes when you begin to think like that, sometimes it can be lethal. For instance, when I was in college, there was a group that were talking about going out roller skating. Roller skating is a fine activity. Nothing wrong with roller skating. But in the youthful mindset that different people had, or one individual had anyway, his suggestion was, look, we need to go roller skating and all of us have some beers before we go roller skating. It'll make it more interesting. I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds kind of cool here, but I'm thinking we're all going to probably end up with broken arms and other difficulties. But that's stupidity talking there if you don't recognize that. And being young at the time when this was said, I didn't see it as stupid. I thought, hey, that ought to be interesting. Instead of saying, wait a minute, we're going to combine roller skating with alcohol? Probably not a good idea. So people can come up with all sorts of ideas of things to do, and you've got to say, well, you know what? I'm not sure I want to be doing that. And you've got to be willing to say, you know what? I want to, you know, you guys go do that. I'm going to pass. And you're probably going to be better off passing. And you live in a world where people will ask you to do all sorts of things. I know for any young person who's going away to college, you've got the fun bunch at college, and they are constantly going to be coming to your room, if you're living on campus, asking you to come and join the fun, whatever it may be. It may be, you don't need to study. Let's go play. They got a tournament with this video game going. Come on, let's do this. Or let's go to the bar. Or let's go to the party. Let's go do these different things. And they're going to say, forget the studying. And you can, but the next thing you know, somehow I flunked out. And my daughter said that in her experience that nobody should come to Ohio State right out of high school. No boys, especially. Because boys, they're like, you know, a kid in the candy store. And which piece do I eat first? And they've got to do this and got to do that. And they don't have the character to say no. But if you're going to go away to school, you're going to have to think about who am I and what do I believe in. And I'm going to have to stand up for these things because you're going to be offered all sorts of things. Drugs, opportunities for sex, all kinds of things. And that's not just in high school. That's in your college and through that whole period of time. And God says, don't go there because of the problems that can occur. And there are lots of problems. Kids come out with all sorts of challenges as a result of the decisions they make, that some of them that last a lifetime. You know, we know a number of young ladies that have had children out of wedlock. And you know what? Once you have that child out of wedlock, you know, not to condemn anyone because we all make mistakes, but you know, you've got to go down that path. And you have that child, and you have the responsibility for that child. And sometimes you have that child at a time in your life when you really don't want to have a child. But it's your child. And you have the responsibility to take care of it, and it's tough. Sometimes you can do things that you get into where you get in trouble with the law. I know that when I was in college, it was during the days when there was Students for a Democratic Society and rioting on campus and all this. Well, the campus was a big place, and you could go watch the rioting and all the upheaval each day. And it was kind of interesting to go there and watch it. But, you know, when you go watch it, you're kind of getting up to the edge. And one day, I had been watching all of this, because it was interesting, and I was young and stupid. So you're watching this, and people making speeches, and they're playing music and yelling and all that. So anyways, it was always interesting to watch it, but I had to go to class. So I went up to class on the 8th floor of the building that at Cal State Fullerton, and I'm up there on the top. And I come down from class, walked down, came out the doors, and the whole building is surrounded by police with the mask on and the shields, and I thought, hey, things have changed since I went to class. Come to find out, some of those people that were enjoying watching all the activities, they got arrested because they got too close. And, well, I wasn't doing anything. You're here, you're gone. So they're all loading them up on paddy wagons and hauling them away. And that was on their record at that particular time. So sometimes, you know, about 5% of young people end up with criminal records because of doing stupid things, stealing things, being involved in things that aren't wise. So we have to be very careful in what we do as far as fun. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 22. So Solomon is the one we're looking to as far as instruction today. Proverbs chapter 22. Let's look at verse 15. Proverbs 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. You know, kids, as kids, foolishness is just part of their life because they've not matured yet, and they don't, they've not matured and understand how to conduct themselves. For instance, you know, my granddaughter is 1.5, so she's not mature yet. So my wife was telling her that this week they went to a store and they had to go up the escalator. Well, she greatly enjoyed going up the escalator. So she, if it's good once, let's do it again. So what does she want to do? She wanted to go down the escalator and then come back. And go down the escalator and come back. So they're like, we've got stuff to do. We're going to get this done. And we're going to stay up here. We're not going back down the escalator. Well, she was very unhappy about that and let everybody know that she was unhappy. That's called immaturity. You know, when you're older, your mom can say, no, we're not going to do that. And you may be disappointed, but you're probably going to handle it better than Blair did. So that's just illustrates immaturity. So you've got to say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to do this. And as quickly as we can, we're going to get out of the store. So the decibel level in the store goes down. So kids tend to be foolish. That's just the way kids are. And you as a parent have to realize that and work with the children. It says the rod of correction will drive it far from him. So does that mean that you beat your kid? Is that what it is? No, a rod is not only something that you paddle your kid with, maybe, but it's also a prod to get back on the straight and narrow. This is the right path. Walk in it. You don't want to go down that path. You don't want to act like that. This is the way. Now, there's sometimes corporal punishment may be acceptable. Sometimes it's a timeout. But what you're doing is you're trying to point them in the right direction. That direction that's going to help them to grow up to be a mature individual who can conduct themselves rightly. But you have to point them in that way. And your children will challenge you. Well, I don't believe that. I don't want to do that. I'm not going there. This isn't fun. This is boring. How many of you as parents have heard your kids say, this is boring? All of us have. All of us have. This is boring. There's nothing to do. We always told my parents that, and they always told us, if you don't come up with something to do, I'll find something for you to do. And we knew that was going to be bad and probably involved work, so we immediately went and found something better to do than complain. So we probably all experienced that. So we want to point them in the right direction. That's the discipline and the instruction that you give them to point them in the right direction. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 29. Proverbs chapter 29. Let's look at verse 15. Proverbs 29, verse 15. It says, the rod and rebuke give wisdom. The rod and the rebuke give wisdom. You know, so that rod that bumps you, taps you, points you in the right direction, that's good for you. And the rebuke. How many of you remember a rebuke from your parents that stuck with you? I know that one time I was mowing the lawn, and the lawn had grown tall. And so I'm mowing the lawn, and it's tall and choking out the mower and making my life tough. And I wasn't happy about it. I didn't want to mow the lawn anyway, but I was expected to, so I was hard at it. And it kept choking out, and I kept having to start the mower. And so I said, took God's name in vain. I didn't ask God to damn anything, but I just used God's name. My dad was out there with me, and he heard me say that, and he came over and he said, you better never say that again. And I'm 64 years old. I still remember that. Still remember it. I thought, wow, I think he's serious. So I did not use that again. And he was right. That was inappropriate language. And so he basically, don't do that. So I can't say that I was perfect on that front. But when I was around my dad, I was pretty much perfect, at least with that portion of my language. But the thing is, you want to avoid those kinds of things. You want to listen to the rebuke. And as it goes on to say at the end of the verse, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So there's no discipline. There's no rebuke. Nobody takes the time to point that child in the right direction. It's going to come back to haunt the parents. And you know, as you as a parent get that phone call about your kid being in jail or your kid being in trouble or whatever it may be, your heart sinks. For most men, they're angry about what their child has done. But for a mother, for a child to act in an inappropriate way, it brings shame. Mothers, it seems, tend to feel more of a shame. I know there was an incident that took place with our kids or one of our children. And my wife was very disappointed and, I would say, shamed. So she refused to accompany us to future activities of a similar sort. I'm not going. I'm ashamed of what you did, and I'm not going to be there. And I can understand her point. You know, she was ashamed of the way the child acted. And that's the way it is with mothers. Mothers tend to be more ashamed, and men tend to be, what's wrong with him? I'm going to kill him when I get him. You know. I know that it was my dad's birthday, and my brother decided to get into an argument with somebody on the street. The guy was driving, in his opinion, poorly. and he was expressing how poorly he was driving. And the next thing you knew, they were out of the cars at a service station duking it out. And so the police came and stopped that, and so my brother went to jail on my dad's birthday. So he gets the call, and my dad always told us, if you go to jail, I'm leaving you in there. But my dad was angry, but he did go get him and got him out and all of that. So anyway, remember, kids tend to be foolish. I'm not sure how old he was, but he was in the foolish stage. So the thing is, we don't want to conduct ourselves in a way that causes damage to our relationship with our parents. And usually if we've listened to our parents, they've showed us a better path to follow. Let's go to just back a few verses here to chapter 29 and look at verse 18. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 18. And really, if you have words to live by, these are words for all of us to live by and for a young person to live by. It says, where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint. And where does revelation come from? It comes from God. Where there is no revelation, where there is no revelation from God, the people cast off restraint. See, you don't acknowledge that there is a God in heaven to whom you are answerable, who is going to judge you. So there's no vision of what you're doing. You're just going with whatever you want to do. But if you have that vision, you can see what's right and what's wrong and what's pleasing to God. And that can be your guide. And you can always say, is this the right thing to do? Is this something that I should do? And God has given you revelation. He's revealed things to you, to me, and everybody that looks at the Bible and seeks to follow it as instruction. It is revelation. God breathed. It's something you can count on and be sure of. And as you put it into practice, it's going to make all the difference in the way your life goes. And as you realize, the Bible gives me the path that I should follow. It's revelation from God. And as you follow that revelation, the results are good. The results are sure and certain. It goes on to say, but happy is he who keeps the law. Happy is he who keeps the law. That, it's something that you may think about, well, but the law is so restrictive. No, it's not. It's God's revelation, and it shows you the path to follow. It is a straight and narrow path that God says, follow this path and you will be blessed. You will be blessed in ways that you can't even imagine. You will be blessed. So Solomon shows us the most beneficial way to live, the way that's going to bring the best life. And it is important that we get our children to understand this. To understand that it is the best way. And if, somebody is telling you this, nah, that's no fun. You got to say, wait a minute. If you're telling me to do something that deviates from this path, it's obviously not fun. It may be fun for a short time, but there's usually a consequence. There's usually a penalty to it. So, you think, and you have to think about this. If you, let's say your friends are saying, let's go do this, and you know it's wrong, and you say, you know what, I'm not going to do what you're asking me to do, how are they going to look at you? They may mock you. They may talk about how boring you are, what a goody-two-shoes you are. They may be quite critical of you. You're square, you're nerdy, however they choose to term it. They put you down to other people. But you know what? They're not the ones who are ultimately going to judge you, are they? God is. You're not answerable to them. But as you stand up for what's right and you do what's right, God looks at you and says, boy, I love this kid. I love this person because they're doing what I told them to do. I love this kid. And you have to realize, you, when you stand up in that kind of peer pressure situation, you're no different than a David or a Joseph or somebody else. that we find in the Scriptures who stood up for what was right. In fact, God would look upon you as the apple of His eye because you were going to do what He tells you to do and be pleasing to Him. So a young person in this world, you know, if you go to school, there's always pressure on you. If you go to public school, there's always pressure on you. And if you go from school, the public school, the high school, and you go to college, the pressure is only going to intensify. You're going to be in the big leagues then. And the test is going to be more difficult. So don't give in to it. Don't give in to it. You know, if you go away to, let's say you go to Texas A&M, you know where everybody's going to be on Saturday? They're going to be at church services, aren't they? And you're going to be right there with them, aren't they? Sorry, they're not going to be at church services. You go to the University of Nebraska, where are you going to be? You're going to be at the football game. You're going to be watching Big Red, or you're going to be watching the Aggies, and you're going to be out there. And it's an invigorating experience to be there with 100,000 screaming fans, to watch the plays made and the whole stadium erupts. It's quite an experience. But then you got to say, you know, can't do that. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to church. If you're in Bryan, Texas, and somebody says you're going to church, now where do you go to church at? Well, I actually go to Humble, Texas to go to church. And they're going to say, what? If you go to Humble, Texas to church, you're absolutely out of your mind. You're going to give up a football game and fun for church? Because trust me, have any of you ever experienced here at church all of the elation and all of the excitement and all of the noise and everything that goes along with a football game here? No. So it's pretty boring in comparison. But you got to realize, you got to look at the big picture and not look at the immediate. Solomon was interesting in that Solomon decided that he was going to test out what was the best way to live. He wanted to find out. So in chapter 2, we see Solomon conducting his own experiment. He conducts his own experiment. He said, let's just read Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 1. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 1. So he's going to conduct an experiment. What's the best way to live? You know, how do things work? So he says in chapter 2, verse 1, he said, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. I will test you with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. So basically he summarizes the whole experiment here. So he tested his heart. I will test my heart. Test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure, but surely this also was vanity. So basically, he concludes his experiment in verse 1. So he tells us this, in case we don't read anything else, at least we'll see this. And if that's what you're choosing is mirth, and that's all your life is about, he said it's vanity. It's vanity, it's like grasping wind, and you'll have nothing left to show for it. He goes on to say in verse 2, I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? He says, we live the high life, and we're laughing and partying and having a good time. He said, there's nothing to it. What does it accomplish? What does it accomplish? Because he tried it, and he found it to be a total waste of time. A total waste of time. So he goes on. And he does the experiment. And we find that in verses 3 through 10. And he lists all the activities he pursued. With his wealth and his power, he had almost limitless wealth. He was young. He was wise. He had everything. He had everything. So he lived life to the hilt. He drank gallons of wine and partied all night. He did many foolish things. He spent money on whatever came to mind. He planned. He engineered. He built. He gardened. He raised the livestock, bought and sold and acquired rare and novel items. Enjoying good music, he found the best singers, the best instrumentalists, and he brought them all together so he could enjoy them live. He enjoyed wonderful music. He could afford it. And we know that he collected wives and concubines by the hundreds. And he lived life to the full, and there was no one to restrain him in his pursuit of any desire of his heart. So what he did is he tested all of this, and then he wrote it down for us. So if you're in doubt of what the outcome is, look at what he said. He already tested all this out. Look at it. See what he said. It is part of the revelation of God. And if you look at the revelation, it's saying, don't go there. The fruits aren't good. So God, you know, allowed him to do this and allowed him to pursue this and didn't take his wisdom away from him so that he could learn from it and record it for us. Let's go to chapter 2 and look at verse 17. It says, therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for wind. So here Solomon repeats his conclusion. Everything he did produced only sorrow. And pursuing those things he saw was basically pointless. All that he did, he achieved nothing. Nothing had changed. And you know, as you pursue that life, apart from God, doing whatever feels right, and live that perpetual youth, when you get to a certain age, you're going to look back on it and say, oh my, I've wasted my life. You know, thinking about some of these things, I've looked at my life and I thought, you know what? I've wasted large portions of my life doing things that weren't profitable. You know, I watched a lot of TV. You know, I watched Ozzie and Harriet. I watched all of it. Now, the only value to it was if I was going to be on some trivia show, I could probably be a winner. But as far as a lasting value, nothing other than say, I endured sitting on a couch watching a lot of TV. And you know, I was thinking about, you know, I've always loved music and thought about music. And I've loved music. You know, there came an age when I discovered music. So I collected a lot of music. I've listened to a lot of music. But as you look back at it, what for? What was the benefit of it? Other than there's a lot of sewage in my brain that I have to flush out. And I've wasted a lot of time with it. Is music wrong? No. But you got to be selective. And I didn't know to be selective. You know. So I do know that. And you know, sometimes you get older and finally it dawns on you, boy, I wasted a lot of time on doing a lot of stuff that's really non-productive. The lesson is, and the lesson that Solomon learned is, don't do non-productive stuff. Do things that are productive. So have fun. But do fun that there's no regret, no penalty. And pursue those things that are pleasing to God. Make that the point for why you're living. Let's go down to verses 24 and through 26. It says, nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink. Nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink. So eating's good, drinking is good, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. So, you know, enjoy your meals, enjoy sitting down with people that you can enjoy a meal with. Enjoy the work that you do. Enjoy it. And that's determined by an approach. The approach that you take. This also I saw was from the hand of God. God allows you to have that perspective. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment without him, the margin says. That is, without God. That is, for who can eat or who can have enjoyment without God? You can't. God's got to be in the picture. You know, going back to work, sorry about talking about this, I'm going to be like the guy on Cheers was always talking about the post office, you know. Oh, no, Home Depot story. But the thing that it's taught me about life is that, you know, you can have a job. It may be not the best job or the most thrilling job. I know that when I go to Home Depot, I am not going to change the world. All right? I may be able to point you to the aisle with Drano on it so you can unclog your pipes, or I may be able to point you to where the air filters are for your air conditioner. That's about it. The world's going to go on. And I realize that, but I do realize that my job, I can have a different perspective because I'm there and I'm trying to be a Christian while I'm there. And the thing is, your perspective, that revelation that God gives you, determines how you're going to approach whatever you do. Whether it's digging a ditch or whatever job it is, you're going to think about, okay, this, I am in God's service. I am His representative. And all of this leads to something much greater. The way I handle it makes all the difference. It's not the here and now. There's something much bigger that I'm dealing with. And so I'm trying to meet that standard. I'm not always doing it. But anyway, you try to meet the standard and do it God's way. You're doing it to His glory and honor. If you're an engineer, if you're delivering packages, whatever you're doing it to God's glory and honor. It says, "For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in His sight." You know, as you're seeking God and allowing God to work in your life, He gives you wisdom and knowledge and joy. "But to the sinner He gives the work of gathering and collecting that He may give to him who is good before God." You know, if you pursue a life of sin, there's not going to be anything to show for it. And most likely, whatever you've gained is going to be given to somebody else. So pursuing sin is basically grasping for the wind. There is no lasting benefit to it. Now, as you think about God's Word, let's realize that many of you as young people think about it's only for old people. God's Word is only for old people. Now, why would you think that? You would think that because look at the church. This room is filled with people that are 30 and below. Isn't that right? Everybody's 30 and below. We're youthful. You know, we're just ready. We're gung-ho to go after it. That's not the case, is it? So if you're a young person sitting here, you're looking around at all the whiteheads and bald heads and people that are old. So this religion is only for old people. That's what you could conclude. And when you think about, God's old, isn't He? I mean, He's been around forever. God's old. And can God really understand what it's like to be young and full of life? God can, and God does. And when you think about the Bible, it's a couple of thousand years old. And how do you see a prophet? They're all old guys, aren't they? They're all old with beards and long hair and robes. And they're just old. They kind of look like Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. You know, that's the way they all are. That's not the case, but that's how we see them. They're not they're whole old and they're not very hip. And as you think about your parents, you know, they're in the church, but they're all old too. Your parents may be 45, but if you're 16, that's really old. That's how, you know, it depends on what you're in. You look at the church as a whole, lots of old people. Look at what people look like at the feast. Lots of older people. In the ministry, most of them look like me. Some better, a few better, most worse. So if I'm the best we got, we're on shaky ground to begin with. So, you know, you as a young person can say, you know what, being in the church and believing God's way of life is just for old people. And I'm going to wait till I'm their age when my hair's white and then I'll make my move. But that's a mistake. That's a mistake. God's way of righteousness is for young people too. So always consider the many young people that God used. And God did use many young people. Sometimes you miss that point, but God did use many young people. And older people, hopefully the benefit of being old is you've gained wisdom and experience. The saddest thing is if you're old and you've not gained wisdom or experience. That should be the case. So with whom did God work in the Bible? Think about Joseph. Joseph, when he went into slavery, was 17. It was just a few years after he went into slavery that he had to reject somebody that was trying to entice him. And when he was 30 years of age, he became second in the land of Egypt. Can God use younger people? What about Samson? Samson was a young man, a foolish young man, but he was a young man when God used him to break the yoke of the Philistines. How about Samuel? Samuel was just a little kid when his mom dedicated him. And Samuel was one through whom God worked. And Samuel went on to be a person of character and to lead Israel for years. And when he was judge, the nation did well. He was the judge, and the nation did well. As you look at David, David went out and took on Goliath. He wasn't an old man. He was a young man. And even today, God wants to work with you as young people to use you and to help you to grow and to mature. And the question is, do you have the courage to pursue that path? So how does a young person seek God? Let's find out. Look at a few scriptures here that give us some guidance. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 51. How do you pursue God? Isaiah chapter 51. Let's look at verses 1 and 2. God right off the bat says, listen to me. Listen to me, you who follow after righteousness. Listen to me, those of you who have chosen to follow my way of life, to live by the scriptures, you who follow after righteousness, who seek the Lord, look to the rock from which you were hewn and to the hole of the pit from which you were dug. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who bore you, for I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. So what is he telling us here? This passage provides a short outline, if you look at it, of what seeking God is and how we should go about it. In the first verse, God speaks to those who seek the Lord, which also goes along with the phrase immediately after it, you who follow after righteousness. To seek the Lord is to follow after righteousness. That's what it means to seek the Lord. So one who seeks God pursues righteousness. What is righteousness? It has to do with the commandments. And when an individual practices godly living, he is seeking the Lord. You know, if you as a young person get a job and you begin to earn that paycheck, probably the first thing you're going to figure out is, man, the government takes a lot of money out of my check. And then, since they take so much money out of your check, the next challenge is going to be, now, my parents have taught me to tithe, but man, I'm not sure I really need to be doing that. And that will go through your mind. Should I tithe? Should I do this? Look at the size of this check. It's pitiful. But you know what? That's the challenge. Will you follow that path of righteousness? And what does it tell you here? It tells us about some advice. It says, look to the rock from which you were hewn. Now, who is the rock from which you were hewn? Well, one way of looking at that is that the rock symbolizes Jesus Christ. Christ set the perfect example of how to live. And he lived in the flesh, and you can look to his example and his experiences, and they help you in the path that you can go down. The second meaning is to look at some of the people that have gone before us in the past, such as Abraham and Sarah. Look at their lives. What did they deal with? How did they deal with it? And their examples allow us to be able to see that rock from which we were hewn and follow that right path. Goes on to say, let's go down to verse 7. It says, listen to me, you who know righteousness, you people in whose heart is my law. Do not fear the reproach of men, nor be afraid of their insults. So he tells us, you who know righteousness, Righteousness is God's law. You know what is right. And you people in whose heart is God's law is something that is becoming a part of you. It is the way that you live. It's the way you think. It's the way you express yourself. It's the way you work. It's becoming a part of your life. And I'm speaking, you know, I can see these things now, but when I was a teenager, I didn't know any of this. None of this registered with me. I didn't know this was even in the Bible. You have an opportunity to know this and to do this and to benefit from following that path from the time that you are a young person. You want God in your life. You need God in your life. And it will make all the difference in how your life goes. Let's go to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. Do you want to pursue this path? Is it the way that you want to live? Isaiah 55, beginning in verse 1. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. If you thirst, come to the waters, because God is the fount of living waters. He flows 24/7. The flow never stops. And those waters are all always there. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. God provides you with the things that are of substance, the things that are going to last. You know, he ties it in with eating and buying wine and milk. And he says, you know, the things I offer you are invaluable. And they'll stick with you. And the benefits of pursuing that way of life will stick with you. They'll be part of your life forever. He says, why do you spend your money for what is not bread and your wages for what does not satisfy? You can spend your money, your time, your energy on things that don't produce good fruit. You can spend it on things that don't satisfy when you finally stand back and examine them. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and let your soul delight itself in abundance. Incline your ear and come to me here, and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, the sure mercies of David. God says, I will make a covenant with you. You're young, but I want to make a covenant with you if you're willing to do your part. And it'll be a covenant that will last through this life and on into eternity if you're willing to take advantage of it. Let's go down to verses 6 and 7. It says, seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. You know, God is near to you at this point in time because if you have a parent or relative who's in the church, you are here and a part of the church because of that relative. And God opens the way for you to enter into a relationship with him now, if you so choose. It's your choice. And God says, seek me while he may be found. Because there may come a time when you're not going to find him. Because you're living a life and you have drawn so far away from him that he's no longer there, close to you, as he might have been. It's your choice. And God said, don't leave, don't go away, but stay close to me and seek that relationship in the here and now. Don't wait. You know, you can go through the long, hard road. And you can go through it, go through all those experiences, and finally say, you know what? This road is not what it was cracked up to be. And you can turn back to God. And many people have traveled that road, and they are going to come back to God. But God's point is, don't even go on that. Don't even get on that road. And save yourself a lot of sorrow and grief. It says in verse 7, let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. So stop doing things that are sinful. Don't do them. And he says, goes even deeper than that. He says, and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Stop thinking about them. Begin to control your mind and what you think about. Let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardoned. So since we begin following, once we begin following God, we see that these are steps that we can take. You might go back and review these things and think about, is this the way that I'm going to live? Am I going to live God's way? As Amos the prophet said, seek good and not evil that you may live. Seek good and not evil that you may live. As you think about the church is the remnant that God's called out of the world to follow Him and live. And He wants not just young people, but everyone in the church to seek Him and live. And you as young people might think about this. You have a golden opportunity to say with the psalmist, O God, You have taught me from my youth. O God, You have taught me from my youth, and to this day I declare Your wondrous works. God can teach you from your youth, and you can grow up to be old, 40, 50, 60, really old, and you can declare, to this day I declare God's wondrous works. So the bottom line is, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Take advantage of the wisdom that God offers to you. And trust me, you'll be glad you did. So thanks everyone for your attention. Please have a wonderful remainder of the Sabbath day.